The following talk was given by Jed Larson at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on February 22, 2026. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. Again, great to be practicing with everybody here. Second day of session. A little cooler outside. As we sit for a while, maybe our joints start to creak a little bit, and I noticed the building's kind of the same a little bit. When it gets cool outside, hear some creaking going on there. So the building's trying to stay still, but it's not always easy to be perfectly still. So we'll go on, and I'll talk about the second half of Genjo Koan. As I say, it's about 4 pages long, so there's a few different passages here. And I guess I'll maybe touch just briefly on that last part that we were looking at about firewood and ash. I don't know if there's too much more to say about that, but Dogen talks about firewood becomes ash and doesn't become firewood again, yet do not suppose that ash is after and firewood is before. So we hear that and it sort of boggles the mind a little bit. He goes on to talk about how in actuality, as he says here, firewood abides in its condition as firewood, and that it's includes before and after and is independent of before and after, which is another sort of mind-boggling statement there. But I think about firewood and how it's completely dependent on the seed in the soil, the tree, the clouds, the sky, the sun. When we have a piece of firewood, that's all there. And I don't think we can deny that. So there's this including before and after. Say that there's nothing going to be going forward from here doesn't make sense either. You know, so Dogen is affirming this before and after. And again, just on another practical, in another practical way, to take a look at a piece of firewood, say that that is an acorn, doesn't make sense at all. So Dogen is saying that firewood is independent of before. You know, it's not, a piece of oak is not an acorn. So it's a little befuddling to hear it, but even as we kind of work through sort of a pretty practical look at it, we can see how both sides are manifesting this before and after really being a part of the picture. But then also the firewood is just a piece of firewood. I can't deny that. He also blends this image with the analogy of birth and death as well. So he, Dogen, moves in a direction where he looks at both the assumption of birth turning into death and then death, birth arising after death. So he's looking at this assumption. As he says here, it's an established way in Buddha Dharma to deny that birth turns into death. So our notion that birth happens and then death is later. Dogen is saying this is an established way in Buddha Dharma that we actually do not find this in experience. This would assume birth and then permanence and then an extinction of that thing. And Buddhism is saying that When we look closely at experience, we actually don't find this. We find the appearance of this happening. And as I was saying in the last talk, to really respect this appearance as it is, to see things coming in to the picture and giving them their full respect. Something that appears is not to deny it in any way. So we're fully respecting the relative reality. Then on the other hand, Dogen, I think, also is reminding us that the notion of death and then birth. You know, we may think of it as reincarnation or different things, but he's saying here that it's an unshakable teaching of Buddha's discourse that death does not turn into birth. And I think here we can see that if we think of some permanent thing dropping out of existence and then reappearing somehow, that's to support an idea of permanence somehow. Well, we can see even from moment to moment, nothing is ever the same. So everything is completely unique and constantly changing. But at the same time, we can see a lot of evidence in the world of cycles where things are transforming and kind of re-emerging in different ways. So it's not to deny how different things look, you know, as they sort of, what this appearance of reappearing can happen. So it's not to just like totally negate how different things can show up in such ways. This aspect of rebirth consciousness where in each moment there's kind of, it looks like a reappearance of how we see things appearing. So something may change, but it has a very similar characteristic from moment to moment. So we respect this similarity of rebirth. But it's not something that's actually true and real in light of actual just experience itself. So if we're looking for what's true and real, that is just direct experience. Yeah, Dogen, I think in some ways, summarizes this. He says, birth is a condition complete in this moment. And also says that in reflecting on kind of the things that we have been talking about here, says, birth is understood as beyond birth. So it's very easy to have like a very specific idea of what birth is, what continuation is, what death is. But Dogen is saying that this is actually birth is understood as beyond birth. So for me, that's a way to actually recognize the importance of respecting what shows up as birth or whatever it's showing up as. Notice its true nature of beyond birth is a way, I think, to fully respect it. When we lock down an idea of something or someone, then we create the ground to make judgments and we end up getting into a lot of different problems. So this teaching of beyond birth, beyond death, is a teaching that goes hand in hand with a flexibility of mind. So we aren't grabbing onto a firm view of anything at all. This is a magnanimous mind which allows the world to show up as it is. Yeah, Kristen?
I'm curious how it can be said with such certainty that death is death, no, and doesn't lead to birth, or, you know, my words might not be appropriate or exact enough, but death is death, doesn't lead to rebirth or birth, yet there is beyond death. And if, couldn't there be the possibility that that beyond death might come back to birth, or can it not be said or even discussed, since it can't be known in our mind in this experience of living life in this plane?
Sure. I think anything's a possibility in terms of how it appears. The more I look at what we consider birth, continuation, and death, just, you know, what everybody would basically accept as a lifetime, I don't necessarily find that that supposition has all kinds of issues with it, because as Buddhism is telling us, we find impermanence and conditionality. We find not self. We don't find self. And I think it's the same thing with like the notion of reincarnation, that you could sort of just on a practical level see evidence of that happening. But at the same time, just like as we question this notion of lifetime, I think there will always be a question of sort of just like a formulated view of what we think reincarnation is. That's what Dogen is doing here, is helping us with particularly firm views that we may have about one or the other, and saying that actually the Buddha Dharma is talking about understanding emptiness, understanding the teaching of not self, and really anything else is kind of speculation to some degree, which is it's kind of the beauty of it in a way, because if there was something, you know, whatever it was that we're talking about, it's always going to be inconceivable. It's going to show up in a way that we just could never pin down. So, you know, if you look at reincarnation, if there's kind of an idea that a certain self dies and then is reborn, that new entity, you know, they think of themselves as the person, you know, so who is the person? And I think the way Dogen is talking about it here, there's a flexibility built into it where we could see that our life is not just our own life, even in the way of looking at just a standard lifetime. It's a type of teaching that's sort of allowing these views to become kind of fluid and to see a bigger picture there. So, yeah, it's not denying anything at all. It's just basically teaching to help us hold our ideas lightly and allow the world to show up as it is. As I was saying, there's many cyclical type of things that are going on, and scientists find this all over the place. I'm not sure if there's any specific research on reincarnation itself, but so I don't know if that quite gets to what you're asking, but yeah. Dogen says, birth is a condition complete in this moment. And this gets back to birth here now being exactly as it is. Dogen says, in regards to the appearance of whatever it might be, firewood, birth, he has a phrase here They are like winter and spring. They do not call, you do not call winter the beginning of spring and summer the end of spring. So when this firewood shows up, it's perfectly in its condition, complete in this moment. It doesn't make any sense for us to be here and, like, say if it's the end of winter, we would say, okay, it's winter, but that's actually the beginning of spring. You know, it's fully winter. And then if it's spring, it's spring. Dogen continues here. He says, enlightenment is like the moon reflected on water. The moon does not get wet, nor is the water divided. We talked a little bit about the image of the moon as a image of enlightenment, and then water being an image of the myriad things that show up in life. So water would be what you might think of as mundane things. So any mundane thing that may be arising, the full reflection of enlightenment is right here in whatever shows up. So it's like the leaf falling from a tree in fall time. This realized universe, as it is not constrained by a falling leaf. And at the same time, Dogen is saying that a single leaf is not constrained by the realized universe. The water is not broken by enlightenment, and vice versa. So what we end up doing is seeing that object, the leaf, and thinking of it as a very specific thing, but it's actually unlimited, as what Dogen is saying here. It's exactly as it's showing up, but it's a reflection of the moon or enlightenment. And Dogen here says, although the light is wide and great, so again, speaking of the light of the moon, or illumination, enlightenment, although it is wide and great, the moon is reflected even in a puddle an inch wide. An inch wide. Yeah. So this great and wide light is not restricted by size of any way, in any way. And then, trying to think here. He ends this particular paragraph by saying, the whole moon and the entire sky are reflected in dewdrops on the grass, or even one drop of water. And I gotta pick up my notes where I was here. There's other parts of this particular fascicle where the drop of water is representative of our own practice. So here he's talking about the whole moon. Again, enlightenment is reflected in the dewdrops on grass. So this is an image of the dewdrops. You think about grass, you know, uncountable things, all the different grass blades and dewdrops on all those. This is all reflecting the moon. And also, even one drop of water. So here, this is a reference to how we show up, I believe, is basically kind of the imagery of this. So in a single drop of water, this is reflected as you, but actually it's ungraspable. We think of me, you know, something in particular, but as Dogen reiterates through this whole fascicle, is what we think of as a thing or ourselves. This is actually ungraspable. What is actually manifesting is this complete functioning. But we do not deny self or others. So it's, we read through this type of teaching. It's kind of like the words come across and then we try to make sense of it. And it sort of doesn't, you know, it's difficult basically because we hear sentences and phrases and imagery that is just like you can't. And again, contextually, it's all sort of like wafting together somehow. And, you know, you can't really make sense of it. But it's like Dogen has like a remote control. You can like hit the pause button on our brain or something. You read this and it just like stops you thinking and it stops you in your tracks. And the next section here is somewhat related to that, or similar in some ways. He says, when Dharma fills your whole body and mind, you may assume it is already sufficient. So again, when Dharma, excuse me, I think I read that wrong. When Dharma does not fill your whole body and mind, you may assume it is already sufficient. Dharma fills your body and mind, you understand that something is missing. So, in some ways, I think we can see this. When Dharma fills your body, you understand something is missing. Part of that for me is the ability to read something and know that it has kind of a flexibility of interpretation to it. So there's something missing. There's something always new and available to the mind of the awakened. But as he says here, when Dharma does not fill your whole body and mind, you may assume that it's already sufficient. So if we read something, and I know this can happen with koans, like we'll read the koan and we'll sort of fit it in with a Buddhist principle. And then sort of we've got it then, you know, it's like it makes sense now. And then we can have that. It feels sufficient to us. But here we have this changeability in Dogen's writing. So it's carrying a capability of flexibility just in the writing itself, which is a reflection of how experience happens. That there is this infinite variety. There's this fluidity that's constantly going on. It can never be pinned down. So another way I think to see this, understanding that it seems like something is missing, and Dogen gets into more of a sort of formulated topic around this particular couple of paragraphs here. Again, when Dharma fills your body and mind, you understand that something is missing. And Dogen, I think, here is talking about life actually is never closed or finished. So the sense of something missing is a recognition that the world is endless. Our life is completely continuous. Life itself is endless. So we can't ever capture this infinite variety. There's always something else. It's, I think, a way that Dogen has that in some ways counteracts an attribute of Buddhism that can sometimes creep into the picture of sort of absolutism, where we think of absolute reality as sort of finalized somehow, or it's this kind of unified truth that has like a bit of a static feel to it when we interpret it that way. So when Dogen introduces seeming or feeling that something is missing, we revitalize this aspect of infinite in variety that the world shows up as, that we can't deny. I mean, it's beautiful in its variety. So life experience is always ever-flowing. It's always spontaneous. And because that's so, our practice can actually also reflect that, that our mind does not settle on any specific view or idea or conclusion about reality, because there is this constant, ever-flowing nature. See that in meditation, of course, where the instruction is to stay here, and it's hard for us because we're not used to that. You know, we're used to kind of following after different ideas and so forth, but that is essentially, I think, the emphasis of part of what Dogen is saying here. He goes on from there and he says, brings up an image here. He says, for example, when you sail in a boat in the middle of an ocean where no land is in sight and view the four directions, the ocean looks circular. It does not look any other way. Let's see here. But the ocean is neither round nor square. Its features are infinite in variety. Let's see here, just figuring when to stop. So he's talking about being in a boat and looking around in that horizon. It looks like a perfect circle.
Good band, by the way.
Oh, Perfect Circle, yeah, okay. I haven't heard that one in a while. Let's see here. So again, this is related to his phrase about this understanding that something is missing. So, again, we may assume some sort of attribute about absolute truth. You know, may kind of have, begin to have like a sort of a feeling of a border around it or a specificity to it. But here, Dogen is reminding us that the way it seems to us is not actually respecting this infinite variety that is actually apparent. Also respecting, as you'll get into in a minute here, that which is only visible to our practice. So he's respecting that the experience that we have has a limit to it. Wherever we are, whatever this experience is, it's exactly what it is. And he goes on and says, let's see here. Although there are many features in the dusty world and the limitless myriad world, you can see and understand only what your eyes of practice can reach. So again, similar to what I was just saying there. So it's appears to be a circle. You know, again, this idea of truth may formulate as something, as an idea, but then we're losing track of how the world shows up in infinite variety. And also an understanding that we can only see what the eyes of our practice can reach. So really respecting this practical sense of how our life shows up. You know, we do different things. We do work. We take care of practical things. It shows up in, you know, the limited perspective that seems to be what our life is. I think there's, in some ways, a way that these blend together too. What seems like, you know, the limited perspective and then the unlimited, if you look at a flower and look at the details of that. Or you look up at the sky and see billions of stars and galaxies. It's, you know, this reality that's basically right in front of us. But we don't need to capture it as anything specific. It can just be the experience that it is. And that's always what it is. So this practice is about hearing what Dogen is saying, but what I think he's helping us see is that there's no need to look any further than what our life is right here. There's always, so we hear infinite in variety, and then we'll also think, okay, what else is out there? But he's saying this infinite in variety is actually a part of what this is. So it's really, I think his writing has a way of really showing two sides of one thing somehow at the same time. So he's bringing together the finite and infinite, you might say. It's saying that this actualization of the fundamental point excludes nothing. Yeah, Andrew.
I just was, I'm trying to piece this all together in my head, thinking back to the firewood and the ash example. And like the one thing that I was thinking of is huge ocean, right? Huge ocean. And like the water's kind of undulating, a little peak comes up, and there's the firewood. But that also includes everything that is an ocean, for that one little thing to pop up. You know, so everything else out there for that one little piece of firewood to pop up.
Mm-hmm.
It is pretty freaky when you think about, you know, you hear that phrase like, well, it's everything. But you think about it like, well, damn, it really is kind of everything.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And then the waves come back down, and then suddenly that goes into a new form, and it's now the log is all over the place, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Weird shit.
Yep. It is, has like a mind-expanding type of quality to it.
And it's like part of me wants to think, oh, it's just kind of a fun little game you can play in your head, and you're like, no, it seems to be true, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, the thought of that ocean with like the waves just kind of going all over the place, and like that one little peak, like there's a thing that pops up.
Yep.
You know?
Absolutely. I think Dogen is definitely doing that. He's probably mostly coming at this, and you can see it from the title of the piece, The Actualization of the Fundamental Point. Or
point in my head is that wave that popped up.
Yeah, that's a good way. I think, that's one kind of way that Dogen talks about it. This single drop reflecting entirety right there. And if I have too much to add to what you said there, so I appreciate that. It's he's coming at this or often Buddhism comes at this as with a emphasis on the entire picture or conditionality, you know, very expansive. And I think that's done because we so often really hone in on specific things, you know, me, inside, outside, so forth. But Dogen has a way of reflecting both sides together, where we can see this entire picture, ultimate reality, but then also see that life shows up in very specific ways and that these are not different things. You know, it's the same experience. So yeah, thanks for that. Another vivid image here. Dogen says, a fish swims in the ocean, and no matter how far it swims, there's no end to the water. A bird flies in the sky, and no matter how far it flies, there is no end to the air. And again, I gotta see where to end here. He says, however, the fish and the bird never leave their elements. When their activity is large, their field is large. When their need is small, their field is small. Thus, each of them totally covers its full range, and each of them totally experiences its realm. So if we walk on the earth direction, there's no end to that direction. When we live, there's countless activities that we do, many different particular ways that we do it. Yet this full activity of our life, whatever it is always exact. It's always perfect and exact. So regardless of size, you feel like you remember the experience of being barefoot on a warm day and stepping into the sand, just a small activity. That is this complete functioning. It's complete and exact. It's perfectly what it is. I think of my recent trip to the Grand Canyon where we did this. It was about an 8-hour hike down and back up. So that was like this big activity, something I'll probably never forget. You know, same thing. Dogen says that when the fish or the bird's need is small, their field is small, and vice versa. So whatever experience shows up, it has this exact quality to it. Yeah.
Is this why people say, and I didn't know this until recently, that Groundhog's Day is the best movie ever about Buddhism on the planet? Because that movie used to drive me crazy, and I used to think it was so stupid and it made zero sense. And now that I've actually seen it, you know, decades later, I just think, this makes sense.
Yeah, which part of it?
Little microcosm where he has to repeat his every day and see all the variables. It's a new day, but the same day.
That's right. It's kind of is expressing in a different way each time. Yeah, I think that's, I feel it's similar in this paragraph here that however it shows up. I mean, you can think of the movie, maybe that's sort of frustrating because you just want it to resolve. But that's exactly how life is. It's never the same, even though it seems like it's sort of a repeating thing or something like that. So if I remember the movie correctly, through that repetition, through the frustration, actually realizes what is kind of most important in his life. So, yeah, that's a good... I haven't thought about that movie in a while.
I get to do that. I'm also drawn to the natural world and the simplicity of it, because the sky is never-ending and the ocean is never-ending. Mm-hmm. A human person with consciousness on the land, that's changed a lot, and now there's a lot more people, and there's cities, and there's cars, and there's air fryers, and there's whatever. It feels like it's a little more challenging for me to just remember the simplicity and stay in the simplicity. Like you said, last night, Buddhism, as Steve Hagen says, you know, it starts simple and we make it simpler.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a good thing for me to hear.
Yeah, for some reason, I agree. It's much easier out in nature, particularly if there's no human structures around. So I'm always like trying to find lakes that don't have any homes on it or anything. So it's something about nature that is a very natural expression, obviously, of the variety. But then when we see man-made things, we see kind of the implications of why they're made, and the mind of progress and different things are kind of wrapped up in different images there. But the Buddha's quest to what his heartfelt quest was to resolve suffering, and that would include any situation. So it's, I think I kind of feel like I get a bit of a glimmer of that at Sesshin, where, again, how I'm maybe similar to you, that I'm seeking out natural settings. But here we have, you know, man-made building and everything, and the encouragement of everybody sitting and helping each other out. And then coming back to this and recognizing that there's an aspect of the teaching of realizing a non-judgment and living without the need to be grasping or averse to things. So it opens up, I think, a similar feeling that I kind of more naturally get in out in nature. But there's a lot of the imagery here that Dogen uses has a very natural feel to it. The bird in the sky, the fish, he uses it in several different areas here.
I want to watch Groundhog Day again.
Yeah. It's a classic.
That movie night.
Yeah, for sure. Let's see here. So Dogen's talking about never leaving our element. The fish and bird never leave their element, he says. And Sesshin is designed to be an embodiment of that. So when we come to Sesshin, the task at hand is to really be here. So normally in life, there's a lot of different options in our mind. You know, we may be here, wherever that might be, but we're kind of not here. So Sesshin, in its simplicity and how the environment is set up, you know, our spirit thing, it's to help us realize that we can do this practice of actually being here, you know, to dedicate ourselves to being here. Also understand, maybe in a more significant way, that here is actually the truth of what's happening. That no matter where we are, this is actually here and now. So it's a reflection of our practice that we are dedicating ourselves to here, but then also a recognition that that's actually always what this is. So the bird and the fish are completely in their element. Dogen then also says, if the fish leaves the water, it will die at once. If the bird leaves the air, it will die at once. And I think we can see that there's a literal truth to that, particularly with the fish. And Dogen, perhaps in a deeper way, is saying that that experience of putting our foot down in that warm sand, if it's something that's not recognized by us, then in what sense is our life alive? You know, if we're just living out of an idea in that moment, or we do that hike and never hear the sound of the raven or this very slight breeze, you know, maybe that crosses our face as we're hiking. What sense is our life alive? So Dogen is talking about the effort of really staying here, and that we can realize this alive quality. Dogen says, know that the water is life and the air is life. The bird is life and the fish is life. I was thinking about the building too here. When you have a building that's it's 70 degrees on the inside and it's maybe 5 or 10 degrees outside, there's this living quality of even inanimate objects, the creaking of the building. And I know that scientists try to define inanimate and animate. And I think it must be super frustrating because it's like, this one should be an easy one. We should be able to figure this out. But they're like, they make a definition and they say that something that's inanimate does not react. You know, something that's, they define life by having the ability to react to something. And then somebody says, well, a rock rusts in reaction to air or water. And they're like, okay, back to the chalkboard. Yeah, the building creaks.
Sympathetically to our joint section.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, it's sitting too. It's got some pain. Yeah, and stung by mosquitoes.
Yeah, stung by mosquitoes.
So, life of the bird. So, life is much broader than I think we, you know, tend to think of it as a certain thing. Maybe. In some ways, Dogen is saying that the life of the bird is the life of the bird. So, and it has to be the life of the bird. And in the same way, our life is completely our life. So we have to live. You know, this is happening. So it's the blend of the effort of practice and recognizing this life, and keeping in mind what Dogen is saying there, if the bird leaves the sky, it dies at once. So we can have this same emphasis that we're practicing. So this practice is unfolding, so we really have to practice. And so we must live completely. He says, I'm going to find where this is. Maybe we'll skip ahead just a little bit here. He says, now if a bird or a fish tries to reach the end of its element before moving in it, this bird or fish will not find its way or its place. So now if a bird or a fish tries to reach the end of its element before moving in it, this bird or fish will not find its way or its place. So to try to find the end of its element. If the emphasis of what we're doing has a flavor of trying to find some end goal or something, again, specific, you can think of that as anything. If we formulate an idea of what the fundamental point is or whatever it might be. If we're trying to find the unlimited before we actually move in it, then we're actually not living in this moment. We'll just be looking for an idea. So we won't be feeling the sand under our feet if we're kind of just looking off into the distance for something else. He also says, when you find your place right where you are, practice occurs. Which is an interesting way to say it. When you find your place where you are, practice occurs. So it's maybe kind of turning it around a little bit. You know, you think of practice enabling us to see where we are. But in some ways, Dogen is simplifying that. When we actually find where we are. And again, for me, that is a reminder of what session is. Everything's set up to be just here. And when we're here, the practice is occurring. And Dogen says, just thinking about what to include here. Probably skip ahead again a little bit. I can find where that is. Another way of saying that, Dogen says, to meet one's practice is to sustain one's practice. To meet one's practice is to sustain one's practice. Again, I think that's a little bit of a change of how we could look at it normally, in the sense of maybe we think of the effort that we have to sustain practice, then we kind of meet the world. But Dogen is saying it in almost the opposite way. When we meet our practice, this is simply to sustain the practice. So it's, think of like sustaining practices, seems like it's, you know, almost like an arduous journey or something that we gotta exert our willpower doing. But here, Dogen is saying that just simply to meet ourselves right here in this moment is to sustain practice. So we can actually kind of set aside the idea that, you know, this is sustaining our practice or having a single pointed concentration during sitting is difficult because it feels like we got to generate this sustaining. But Dogen is saying here, just meet our practice right in this moment. But then we have to come back to this moment over and over. But it's just a simple matter of meeting one's practice right here. I'm moving ahead a little bit, so I got to find where I'm at here. Okay, yeah. So in the very last paragraph, before in, he gets into a koan here, I'll leave that off. But Dogen says, here's the place, here the way unfolds. Again, I have a feeling that this is a reflection of how Session shows up as well. So here is the place, here the way unfolds. So sitting in Session, here is the place. So everything in Session is set up to simplify the environment and keep things to a bare minimum. So when we walk into a room, it's pretty easy to walk into a room and not really pay attention to the fact that you're walking into the room. So here we bow as we enter the room. Essentially, every function of Session is meant to be a facilitator of mindfulness. So it's like Oriyoki, you're always doing one thing at a time. And that's meant to enable this hear the way unfolds. Because we often sort of get off on different tracks thinking about different things. So we're doing one thing at a time. So bowing into room here, that's a reflection of collecting the mind, but then actually doing exactly what we're doing. So we do that one thing in Oriyoki, we're doing exactly just that one thing. And we're doing it right here. Here's the place. So we're giving ourselves the chance to actually be here. We're giving each other the chance to be here. And the term way is used here. He says, here the way unfolds. And this is probably related to the word Tao. And it's a powerful word because I think it captures different parts of what our practice is. So we can think of the way as the way of practice for us. So it's kind of like a path, so a way to do something. So we, the way that we do this is to bring awareness, everything that we do. So it's kind of like has this activity side of it. And then the Tao is also the great way, or it's the way it is. So you can see the term way with different flavors to it. So the way is like a path or our activity, but then also particularly Dogen here has his way of saying that this is actually the great way. So our activity is a manifestation of the great activity. And it shows up in, you know, however it shows up in Session, you know, we can be looking at the, you know, facing the wall, and notice the wall is like completely gone. You know, we're off thinking about, you know, whatever it might be. We need to make extra keys for our house or something like that. You know, some sort of errand that we need to do next week or something like that. And then, but the wall's back. We've come back to what this is, and it's, when we notice, I think it's interesting to note that when we notice, we are already back. So it's just this noticing, we're already right here. So this way is simply just to be here. Dogen continues on relatedly a little bit here. So he says, here's the place, here the way unfolds. He also says the boundary of realization is not distinct. The boundary of realization is not distinct, which is also helpful in terms of sitting. Pretty easily we can come up with an idea of realization as something that we're kind of aiming for, or it's something distinct out there. But he's saying that the boundary of realization is not distinct. It's you know, it just seems like when we consider ideas like realization or the fundamental point in our mind, they become just distinct things. There's a boundary there, a boundary between mundane and the special. And I think about maybe that idea of, you know, if you're in northern Minnesota, I think maybe some of you had the experience where it's really a cold night outside. Maybe you just get up north, it's completely dark night, and then you look up and it's just like, bam, the stars are so vivid and bright right there in front of you. And I think that is perhaps related kind of to the emphasis of what Dogen is talking about here, where the realization is not distinct. He says, the realization comes forth simultaneously with the full experience of Buddha Dharma. So this seeing the stars is not, you know, I think in that image, there's nothing new, basically. It's just something that's always, was already there. You know, it's just like, it's seen. That's all that's the only difference, basically. There's no boundary going on. When we notice, here the world is, that we could be noticing anything at all. And, for me, I also think about this non-boundary, or Dogen's way of sort of softening our sense of boundaries, that he's always bringing us back to what's true and real, just the feeling of the wood planks beneath our feet as we move around the zendo. So it's beyond any notion of realization. We can just set that aside. You know, it's just a matter of looking up at our life as it's occurring. It's already here. So we're already here and now, but we do have to make this effort to come back to here and now. You know, it's not an easy practice. The different challenges that come up, certainly being in session and having to stay with this, is a pretty, it's not like anything else basically in our lives. So it takes a certain amount of effort in staying with it, but we can allow it to be a gentle practice as well. So hopefully I didn't speed through that too much. You could probably spend a lot of time on each one of these different sections here, but to go through it a little bit, I thought it offered quite a bit in terms of understanding. Our portraying Dogen's feeling about not creating necessary dichotomies about what we think of as ultimate or what's just very practical. He's bringing those together. And as I was saying, I think there's some analogies with session as well here. But I don't know if any questions or comments popped into your mind as we were going along here.
Thanks.
Sure.
Translation.
Yeah, it is nice. Each one, the other one is quite different in a lot of ways. When you look at them side by side, it's like, oh, wow, that's... almost to the point where if you track down a part of a paragraph, it's almost hard to find where it is in the other one. Because you're like, huh, okay, yeah, it's
Yeah. I'm not more familiar with
Akamaru's
version.
Okay. Yeah, I should look at that one too. That's good to mention that. That would be another highly recommended translation.
You know, from the start, we started on this yesterday, I've been thinking a lot of intentionality, you know, will to action, intentionality. And I think it started thinking about the other day when a friend was talking about moving to start meditation. And that first 20 minutes, I was all over the place, and then I started to settle down. And then we come to the session, it's like, you know, that third day of the Lahatsu, that's where it really, and so
yeah,
you have this intention to do that. You know, I mean, I intend to live, so I, you know, I intend to take care of my family, and so I get the food and shelter, things like that. Mm-hmm. We intend to come to the cushion. We intend to do that. But it seems that Zazen, to me, is like an opportunity to drop intentionality, drop our preferences. Like nowhere else in life, and maybe we can drag that into our lives with us, but we intend to understand this in an intellectual way. Mm-hmm. Like, it's inconceivable.
Yeah, he stops you from doing that.
So, I mean, sometimes we gotta appreciate practicing that. It's so unusual, right?
Yeah,
I mean, here's unintentionality, the only time in our life, maybe, unless we can drag it in.
Yeah, that's right. It's an unusual experience in that way, just to do something for the sake of doing that one thing.
Yeah.
And the kind of great irony that that's what our life is, if we're to really enjoy our life, that's the key to understand it, to actually live our life for the sake of our life, which is, you know, the life of friends and family and everything. If it's always... So yeah, I think that's a great reminder. If it's always intention, then it's always sort of for something else.
Always leaving a trace.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the fish leaves no trace.
Yeah, or the bird near the sky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks for this. It's great.
Thanks.
That is a great reminder, just because I think so much of meditation for me and talking about it with friends and family, there is an expectation that when you're going to be there, something's going to get sorted out. And that's just a great word that will stick with me. Thanks, Rick, because that it might get sorted out, but there doesn't, the intentionality to sort it out doesn't need to be there. It just will happen if it happens. So thank you. That's really great.
Well, I think there are meditation practices where there is an intention to sort.
Yeah.
You know, with the Vipassana, I don't know, well, but I think that you do that with Vipassana, you get, oh, I'm thinking about this, I'm going to put it in that category. And so, it's, I might be judging about it, but it seems like that type of practice is intentionally trying to do something and categorize your mind. Yeah, I think almost everything a human does is intentional.
I suppose that's part of the frustration with Zen, is it's, you can't really make sense of it. You know, you hear these teachings about non-gaining mind, and that sort of just leaves you with nothing to hang on to. But really, that's the whole point of it, is to understand how we generally want to hang on to different things. It's a different way. It's pretty incredible that these teachings are here, that they've survived too. I think like this whole Shobo Genzo was kind of, it was lost for centuries, I think. Only stored in like a couple people's houses or something like that.
I think it was like 400
some years. Oh yeah. Yet we have this teaching surviving all these centuries that is talking about the great way in understanding intention and not prescribing anything at all, which is maybe sort of the only teaching out there that doesn't prescribe anything whatsoever. It's... directly focused on just doing this thing for the sake of doing it. And that's really the depth of what our life can be. So, yeah, thanks for the comments and reflections there.
Dedication is something useless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's different formulations. I always mention, so Okamura, you said, is the translator of Genjo Kon, one of the translators, said Zazen is good for nothing. But, you know, he kind of said it with tongue-in-cheek just because that's a sort of sharp phrase, I think. So Zazen is good for nothing in the sense that if we go into Zazen trying to get something, then we're kind of just trying to get something. We're not doing Zazen anymore. And then Okamura reformulated that in his own words. He said, Zazen is good, but not for something. Yeah, but not for something. Maybe a little bit of a softer feel to that one. Yeah. Yeah, Dogen, as I was saying, it's, you know, kind of our brain gets paused, you know, stops in its tracks when we read Dogen. And for some reason, the image of, I was playing with, this is a few years ago, my nieces and nephews, we used to play this game. This is totally unrelated, it just popped in my mind. Play this game where we'd hold a TV remote, and or I'd hold it, and they would be in the room, and then they'd be doing something, and then I could, like, say what I press, like the pause button, and then they'd have to freeze. And then, like, hit the fast forward, and then they'd, like, be going around in, like, slow motion, and they'd be like, or, like, slow motion in reverse, so... I said it was completely unrelated to anything. Just a funny thing that these memories that pop into your mind. That, you know, that's the, that's what we're looking at here with Buddhism, is to, really appreciate our life, to allow these beautiful moments to come up, to fully be here, to be, this full picture that shows up for us. So I appreciate the ability to run through this, and good sitting with you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.